words of my lips and the meditations of all our hearts be now and always acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Please be seated. Not all of you will be there every day this week, savouring the mysteries of this holy season. I know that for many of you, this day will be the day when you remember the cross. So let me tell you the story of this week. And when you come next week to hear how the story continues, you will come ready. The Paschal full moon rises on Tuesday. Christian astronomers look for that full moon because long ago in the time of Jesus, and for Jews today, it signals the beginning of Pesach, Passover. For us, the same full moon falls in Holy Week and tells us that next Sunday is Easter. That same full moon was about to rise in the week that Jesus entered Jerusalem. Initially, he is welcomed, as you have seen. Our palm branches have been blessed and carried as we have identified ourselves with those who greeted him that morning. He will have entered Jerusalem loved by those who saw him as their liberator and feared by many who jealously guarded their privileged positions and their power over others. Jesus had many times said that he was coming to Jerusalem to meet his fate, to suffer and to die at the hands of those who hated him. But he was giving himself up to that destiny freely as a volunteer. And now the time had come. His love for the ordinary human, for the man and woman in the street, and especially for any who were excluded or despised or discriminated against, or who suffered in any way because of their age or their infirmity or their social status or their sex or their race. His love for them, God's love for them, was about to be demonstrated in the most extravagant way possible. The early church struggled to find the right words to describe what Jesus was doing this fateful week. St. John had seen him as God camping out amongst humans. And this week saw his love like a shining light, enlightening everyone except those who shut their eyes to it. St. Paul saw Jesus as the icon of the invisible God, who came down to the lowest depths, lower than a slave, the scum of the earth, dying freely on the cross for us. On the Thursday, just before he was arrested, the moon was full. So that's when those who wanted him dead ambushed him and arrested him by bright moonlight. That year, the full moon rose that Thursday, and that's why the meal the disciples prepared was the Passover. Then, a rather ironic celebration of the liberty of God's people, since they were not free right then, but under the thumb of a brutal occupying power, not for the first time in their history. But Jesus was not offering himself up just for the Jews. That night, at the Passover supper, as the bread of affliction, the unleavened bread, was torn into fragments and passed round, he said, "This is my body, broken for you." And at the end, after all the Passover commemorations of the children of Israel's escape from slavery in Egypt, the last cup of wine was shared. "This," he said, "this is my blood. My blood of the new and eternal covenant, shed for you, shed for all people, shed for the forgiveness of sins. Whenever you do this, remember me. Our understanding of the events of Good Friday and of Easter Sunday stem from those words. There isn't anything in all of theology, there isn't anything in all of philosophy or mythology that goes as deep as this. There is a depth of determination, a depth of love in those words and the events which followed, which has never been equaled. I remember reading recently, actually reminded as I read it, that when C.S. Lewis was entranced by mythology, but not quite there as far as becoming a Christian was concerned, he had a conversation with J.R.R. Tolkien about the truths that are expressed in the great myths of the human race. I believe it was Tolkien who said that, yes, there were great truths in all the ancient myths and legends, but the great advantage of the Christian myth was that of all the myths and legends, this one was true. It is true. And it has consequences. Most of all, it has consequences for sinners, and it has amazing consequences for sinners who believe. George Herbert wrote a poem about it called simply Love. It is about that moment when you or I meet Jesus and we are scared. Although because it is Jesus, we needn't be. And here is the first part of that poem, and in it, the guest is you or me, and the host, Jesus, is called Love. And this is how it goes. Love bade me welcome, yet my soul drew back, guilty of dust and sin. But quick-eyed love, observing me grow slack from my first entering in, drew nearer to me, sweetly questioning if I lacked anything. Yes, love is Jesus. And here it gets personal, because I can't help how I am. I am guilty of dust and sin. We all are. It's not just what the medieval church called original sin. It's two more things. It is the dust and sin of the world, which we can't possibly avoid because we live in it. And it's our own personal stuff, which maybe even the closest to us don't know about. That's what causes us to draw back from Jesus. But Jesus has just asked you or me a question. He has asked very caringly if there is anything we need. And in the next stanza, the middle one, we have to answer. And because it's Jesus, we feel obliged to answer truthfully, because he would surely know if we tried to deceive him. So we confess that we actually lack any right, any worthiness to be his guest, to be in his company. But watch how Jesus puts it right. Here is the second stanza. He's just asked what I lack. A guest, I answered, worthy to be here. Love said, you shall be he. I, the unkind, ungrateful? Oh, my dear, I cannot look on thee. Love took my hand and smiling did reply, who made the eyes but I? The result in the end, of course, is that Jesus wants you, wants me, wants everyone that lives and has ever lived sitting at the table of his love. He will not let our feelings of guilt or unworthiness stand in the way. The final stanza admits that the eyes he made, the minds he made, have not been well used by us who now possess them. Only our unwillingness to accept his invitation can possibly keep us from his love. So now, in the final stanza, we see the admission of guilt from the guest, followed by the willing acceptance of Christ. washing our feet, as it were, serving us with love. This is how it ends. Truth, Lord, but I have marred them. Let my shame go where it doth deserve. And know you not, says love, who bore the blame? My dear, then I will serve. You must sit down, says love, and taste my meat. So I did sit down and eat. So if you can, be there. Be there and follow the drama through. If you can, be there as we remember that Passover night when he gave us his flesh and his blood. If you can, stand with Mary and John at the foot of the cross. If you can, be there at dawn as the new day rises and meet him with the rising sun on Easter Day. Or join his family as we not only celebrate his risen life, but really become part of it. Amen.